Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I am Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, we're joined by David Dawson. David is currently operating as an engineering manager in a large Salesforce customer in Melbourne. He's someone that I worked with a few years back and placed into a senior developer role, and his career has really accelerated and grown over the last couple of years. Throughout this episode, we talk about his early days in development and how he found his way onto Salesforce projects. We talk about the difference between smaller projects and then moving into enterprise projects and kind of the mindset that you need to have and the differences that you face. We then talk about the acceleration of his career and the opportunity that he had working for a technology business and what he learned from working around really smart, super switched on engineers in and outside of the Salesforce ecosystem and how he learned from others and how they learned from him. We then look at his switch into more of an engineering manager role and the principles on mindset that he has had to have for that and how he has to think differently to just a senior developer. We also look at how he interviews his team and how he continues learning and growing his own skill set. So a really interesting episode for anyone that's kind of coming through the developer track that might want to go down the management and technical leadership route rather than necessarily going down a pure architect route. David has really accelerated his career over the last few years, and I think a lot of people can take away some really interesting tips and advice from the path that he has taken.
So David, thank you very much for agreeing to be a guest. I wanted to get you on the show because I think your career path has really accelerated over the last few years, but your background is really interesting as well, and I think that the role that you're playing now is something that a lot of people will be aspiring to do. A lot of developers would want to get to an engineering lead or manager role. So I kind of want to unpick your journey and talk a bit about how you got there.
Yeah.
But let's go right back to the beginning. And if we look at your career before Salesforce, what was it that you used to do?
So before Salesforce, I actually spent some time kind of tinkering around web design. So kind of spent a little bit of time playing, you know, with WordPress CMS and Joomla. Kind of back when those CMS systems were really kind of kicking off and getting some acceleration. So the majority of work I did before Salesforce was actually kind of freelance work. So I think, you know, by the time I kind of graduated uni, Salesforce, I kind of just, you know, fell into it. But before then, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was doing was, you know, helping small businesses set up their kind of websites and their front ends and their pages they use to put their brand out there. And, you know, I think even before I got into the Salesforce stuff, there was a lot that I picked up from that time. You know, I kind of took it for granted because I was just making a couple of $100 from a freelance site while I was going through uni. I can't say I thought much of it back then. But, you know, going through a lot of those processes of dealing directly with clients and, you know, being a bit of a one-man team, it kind of showed me a lot around, you know, taking responsibility and working in a bit of a web dev capacity gives you, I guess, obviously an appreciation for good UI UX and kind of thinking about the user experience. But it really does give you a lot of empathy when you're working directly with the client because you're not in a kind of a big team or a big organization. And yeah, I think it allowed me to just directly connect at the end of the day, understanding their requirements and just kind of hitting that sweet spot. It was, again, I didn't think much of it back then.
Sure.
But looking back, it was pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously you mentioned the kind of UI UX stuff and the web dev side of things and your role. Obviously, I've seen your career develop over the last few years, and I think you're into a range of different areas now. And I know you've been quite passionate about DevOps, which we'll discuss. But it kind of doesn't necessarily lend itself, right, the beginning of your career and what you were doing to the kind of more heavy lifting stuff that you're doing in terms of delivery now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like it was almost as I was going along, you're just kind of picking up pieces and forming a bigger puzzle. But, you know, definitely the stuff that I picked up then, at the end of the day, you're the whole point of Salesforce, you know, is to make people's lives easier. You know, a lot of things that used to take hours and hours to process on spreadsheets and access databases, we're building systems that make kind of back office processes a lot easier. And a lot of the thought that goes into what you're building, you know, there doesn't need to be a different, let's say, level of UI, UX or user experience given to, let's say, websites or mobile apps. And then, you know, back office systems are kind of an afterthought. You just slap something together and off they go. So definitely a lot of those skills were transferable, but I mean, yeah, rightly so. There's a lot more to it than just UX or even than just DevOps. It's, I guess, like enterprise engineering or enterprise platforms. I think as I went along, I kind of just picked up the pieces, and it's allowed me today to form a bit of a bigger puzzle.
Sure. So not wanting to go too far back, but you were doing your web dev work, and then obviously you got your first entry point into Salesforce. How did that come about?
I can't put it down to more than chance. I'll be honest, when I applied for the role that I got, I didn't even know what Salesforce was. I'd never heard of it before. I graduated uni and I was looking to get into engineering. And I guess the stars just aligned. It was a junior engineer role. And I remember turning up to the interview, and we actually did the interview at a pub. I remember them going, "Do you know what Salesforce is? Do you know what this is? Do you know what that is?" And my answer was no to the majority of questions, but I was keen to learn. And I'd watched a couple of videos. So I probably gave it the best shot I could as to what I thought Salesforce did. I was probably miles off. But yeah, it was a bit of a fluke, but it obviously worked out pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. So then what did those early days of Salesforce development look like for you? Like, what was the typical piece of work that you'd work on in the kind of first year or two of Salesforce development?
So it was a startup consultancy that was mainly focusing on not-for-profits. There was a couple of clients within the education sector and some other projects that I got to work on as I went along. But yeah, I'd say the kind of primary clientele were kind of the NFP side of the Salesforce implementations. I think having a background of kind of PHP, a lot of the skills I think were transferable, and the lead developer, he in all fairness, he had a lot of time for me and he had a lot of patience, which I'm really thankful for those first kind of 18 months. But yeah, it was just a case of kind of taking the knowledge that I had, and it was good both having an understanding of how PHP works, because when he was explaining things to me, he was able to use what I knew as an example.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So
then, and if we continue to look back then, how did you feel, because of your UI UX experience and the web development work that you'd done, how did you feel about developing in Salesforce initially?
I guess like the Salesforce platform, we take it for granted sometimes, but you're in this space where you just kind of have this perfect little pocket to place your code and this perfect little pocket to place your, back then it was Visualforce pages. And you know, I kind of very quickly, I almost thought it was too easy, but it was good, because I wasn't the best engineer by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm sure if I looked at the front ends that I built back then, I probably wasn't sure what I was thinking. But learning on a platform like Salesforce is both a good thing and a bad thing, because like I said, it does all the hard work for you. You don't have to worry about deploying, you know, clusters and scaling, and that's that side of platforming. You're kind of just pushing your code into this existing platform and you can see it running and you can debug it. So you have a lot of time during that learning phase to learn, you know, concentrate on object-oriented, concentrate on writing good code. And I guess it is a platform where when you're focusing on one aspect like that, you can learn quite quickly. But at the same time, I guess a byproduct of that is you don't get, I guess, like firsthand experience with a lot of the things that we kind of take for granted on Salesforce. So, you know, learning how a lot of those work, you sometimes have to go out of your way listening in on conversations or making sure you're asking questions when you're in sessions. So I guess it was a good thing and a bad thing, but it definitely allowed me to kind of rapidly grow just from a pure kind of coding perspective.
Sure. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from the smaller consulting business, you went to then a bigger consulting business.
So the next step after the consultancy was actually to an insurance company. So that was, I was kind of just thrust directly into enterprise programs thereafter. And luckily the program that I joined, the first project was quite a small project, kind of came in that sweet spot where there'd just been this big kind of partner-led implementation. When I came in, there was a little bit of BAU to be done, but you know, it wasn't nothing that I hadn't done before. But then I think there was a little bit of like, you know, we've overspent, so let's take it easy on Salesforce for the next couple of months. So I had a bit of smooth sailing when I first got in there, and that was my introduction to, okay, you know, I'd learned how to write code, and I'd learned how to deliver projects, but this is where you get into the process. So, you know, what's waterfall? What is agile? Why do we do it? You know, what kind of things do we do when you're working at the scale of a larger team to make sure that, you know, we still keep everything aligned and we still continue going and hitting whatever date it is that we've committed to at the start? So that jump there was an opportunity for me to, I guess, use the skills that I'd learned in a much bigger project. But the learning for me, at least for the first, you know, half of my time at that company was definitely learning the ins and outs of how enterprise projects run.
And like, is that, because that was my question, is like going from smaller projects to bigger projects, it's just really process, right? The code that you're writing should be the same because you should always be writing good quality code, right? It doesn't matter if it's a big project or a small project. But is it more like, can anyone make that transition, do you think, in your opinion, going from a not so complex environment to a more complex environment? It just takes a different kind of mindset, maybe?
Yeah. No, I it's not that big of a shift. I'd say it's more of like a gradual growth. I mean, if you look at like maybe you've implemented something yourself, like a small project, when you move into that larger landscape, you're still, it's, you know, even if you keep it to Salesforce, it's still Salesforce. There's maybe 1,000 users instead of 10 users or 100 users. But I guess from an engineering aspect, you rather than being one of one, you may be becoming one of four or one of six. And a lot of the things that you learn going into a project like that is less around your, you don't have to focus so much on your self-learning, because you'll, you know, naturally by pairing with other people, by seeing other people's codes, and just by being naturally inquisitive, you'll kind of feed off the other engineers in your team. And it's actually a really good position to be in to allow you to grow.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that the challenges are there around, you know, you get into, when we're all writing code, how do we write things that are reusable? And how do we write, you know, ideally you'd want a code base, no matter the size of it, to look like it was written by one person. That's kind of the goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious when you're working in, you know, source codes or platforms where teams clearly haven't been communicating or working together, because whether there's code or feature replication, you know, it's more of those collaborative challenges that you have to learn.
Sure.
You can shift your focus. You can almost like drop the engineering stuff and the coding stuff, and you'll pick that up just as a byproduct of working with other developers.
Yeah, nice. And as someone that obviously speaks to people about jobs regularly, I'll always remember the time I reached out to you about a job and you weren't looking for work, but you said you were inquisitive, right? You said, oh, who's the company? And when you found out, that changed your mind. And I wish more people would actually just entertain discussions around jobs, because you don't know what you're turning down until you know what it is, right? You don't know. So if we look at the business you joined at that point, I guess they'd class themselves as a technology business. And did going into that environment, I guess that was probably your first tech business?
Yes, that was the, at least, let's say, working within an IT department, you know, as it was back then. And yeah, I mean, you're right. It does come down to, you kind of have to balance the, you know, there are companies now that are investing in you. They're investing in your development plan. And I think it's like, it's good to trust your gut and know when you're in a good place. But it's also, you know, you don't want your decisions to just come down to remaining unaware of the opportunities that are out there. Because, I mean, there are some really cool opportunities that will pass you by just by, you know, replying no to a LinkedIn message, or by, you know, hanging up on a phone call as soon as the person introduces himself. And it takes 5 minutes to listen. And then look, if it's not up your alley and it doesn't, you know, interest you at all, it's not hard to say, you know, thanks, but no thanks. Sure. And at least then you're not burning any bridges. You know, there's a lot of reasons why you shouldn't go down that route.
Yeah. And I think obviously, especially like pre-COVID, if we look at the market back then, people were getting hit up, you know, 10 times a month, especially if you're in the development space. So it can be harder to reply to messages. But I think, yeah, obviously you were inquisitive and you asked where it was, and actually that's a company you wanted to work for. Therefore, you ended up working there. And how did that exposure kind of change your working in an engineering team, working around other kind of non-Salesforce engineers? Do you feel that was really beneficial to where you're at now?
Yeah, the time I spent in, you know, let's say an actual tech company was huge. Just in, and this is where I say, like, especially when you're in large scale implementations and everyone's got experiences from, you know, from different backgrounds, and, you know, there's all these frameworks and practices. There's everything from frameworks on, you know, how to deliver agile projects, and there's frameworks on how to write code, and there's frameworks on how to build integration. And sometimes you can get lost in like the, you know, knowing the framework or having being certified in a framework, or, you know, having experience in a framework almost feels like a bit of a badge of honor or something you can write on your kind of CV as something you've achieved, which it is. But I think being at the tech at a tech company, it cuts through. It's not enough to just say, yes, we're going to implement this framework, but then you get hit with the but why, and you need to be able to explain. It's you can't just hide behind, I'm going to follow this instruction manual and I'm going to nail it, because there it's a building full of so many smart people that, you know, no one cares for frameworks at, you know, face value. And even if it comes to it, you know, it's an organization where they'll pick from kind of their favorite frameworks, or, you know, compile the things that work. And at the end of the day, it's outcome driven. You know, there needs to be a reason why you're doing something, and it's, you know, you have to be confident that you know why you're doing it, because at the end of the day, as soon as you put this forward in any sort of forum, they're going to ask you the questions, why are you doing it? And like I said, you can't hide behind frameworks. You need to be able to, you know, clearly articulate what it is you're doing, how you're doing it. And there are some incredibly smart people that'll pick it apart if you're not able to kind of back up what it is you're putting forward. So it may sound daunting, but it was an amazing learning experience. Like, it really is. It's not like you're thrust out there in a dark room and then you have to emerge every 6 months and present to these really scary people. You're kind of in amongst them all day, every day, and you're learning from them. They're learning from you. And there really just was this big culture of, like, you know, we can share knowledge on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, there was SMEs throughout the building. You know, there was guys that knew React like the back of their hands. There was Ruby engineers. There was, like myself, Salesforce. And there was a culture of, you know, let's give up 2 days every couple of months and maybe hold an open class if anyone wants to learn React or if anyone wants to learn Salesforce. And the company culture there, you know, it really kind of opens your eyes to, like, well, why are we doing this? And, you know, like I said, the decomposition of these frameworks is one part of that, but it really kind of, you know, working for a company, it doesn't have to be a tech company, just working for a company with a culture like that really shows you the importance of, like, you know, diversity. Diversity is more than just, you know, having two people or an even mix of genders. Like, there's such a deeper meaning to having a diverse team.
Yeah.
And yeah, it really was like being in a tech company, the learnings from an engineering aspect were, you know, priceless. But I'd even say just working for such an organization with such a strong kind of brand and culture, like a bit of a cultural identity from within the organization was amazing as well.
Yeah, nice. I think one thing that I find, especially when I'm recruiting for tech companies, and I've said this before on the podcast, but it's really hard to find Salesforce developers for tech companies, because what I often find is that the CTO or the head of engineering doesn't want the correct answer always to be Salesforce, or the only answer to be Salesforce, right? They want people to look at a problem and work out how they can solve it. And the first consideration shouldn't be, let's solve this with Salesforce. It should be, let's solve this in a way that it's best for the business and the user and whoever it's going to benefit. Did you feel you had that mindset before you went in, or is that something you learned there as well?
I definitely did. Yeah, I can't say I've ever been one to drink the Kool-Aid. And I will even say, you know, from an early on, you know, if I didn't feel like it belonged in Salesforce, you know, there's an aspect of, especially when you're in a consultancy, it's like, well, if we can build it in Salesforce, then we're going to offer it. And if you know, the offer is accepted, then we build it. But I guess when you're working for an end client and you're I guess building a piece, you're responsible to also be the one that goes, you know what, guys, this really doesn't belong in Salesforce. Like, I get it could be easy, but, you know, we're building this for the long-term play, and it just doesn't belong there. It just doesn't scale to the level that we can foresee it scaling to, or you know, maybe it's just not fit for purpose. And, you know, Salesforce, you know, hats off to it, is a very kind of flexible and customizable platform. But yeah, it is about, I guess, just being an advocate for the organization that you're implementing for before you're an advocate for the system. Because sometimes putting even just, you know, Salesforce specifically, putting Salesforce in a scenario where you're putting it forward for a purpose it was never built for. It can be detrimental to not only your credibility as someone who recommended that solution, but also, you know, just internally the kind of adoption of that platform. You know, you're definitely best kind of using the platform where it fits in, and it definitely has a sweet spot. There's no doubt about that, especially with kind of the size of the Salesforce ecosystem now. There's no shortages of places that it is built for or can be extended to.
Sure. Yeah. So you've and again, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a while since I've looked through your CV or had a discussion about opportunities. So you were never a big certification man, like you weren't massively into certs.
I'm not. No. And that even, look, I didn't do it on purpose, but I think if you had a look at my LinkedIn now, there'd be a fair few certifications that aren't around anymore.
Yeah.
Because I just clean forgot to renew them. But no, I've never, and this isn't, you know, I don't have any, you know, let's say, negative thoughts about the certification process or around certs. I just find that from what I want to do and what I want to achieve in my career, it doesn't really align to the certification process.
Sure. So then what do you focus on to learn? Like, where do you continue your learning development? Is it by working with other smart engineers, or is there a platform or an engineering you know, piece of content that you regularly read? Like, what, how do you get your knowledge?
I guess it's gotten to a point now where I've kind of realized that you can learn for the sake of learning, but you know, there are things that kind of pique your interest just naturally. There'll be something that someone's working on or a new platform that comes out. And, you know, I'm not one to necessarily say that, you know, open source is the only way to go. And, you know, but I do love kind of, you know, picking around the open source community. And, you know, I wish I had more time to contribute back to these projects. But I guess, you know, rather than focusing on Salesforce, which is where the certification process kind of takes you, like I have more of an interest in just general, you know, engineering, mm-hmm. you know, or software engineering. And, you know, there are routes you can go down. You know, for example, I'm sure I could, you know, take a Java course, but I guess I just kind of like going wherever my interest takes me. And usually a lot of the things that you learn, you know, it's kind of a, when you've done one thing one way, and this even comes through in an interview process. Like if I was to ask a question and you gave me an incredibly specific example, it's probably clear to me you've only done that one way. Whereas when you've done that one thing in multiple ways, you can understand the commonality between the different scenarios you've done it in, and then you can talk to that as opposed to the specific examples, and then you can use an example to kind of back up what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, nice.
And that's where I like to put my attention now. Like I like to look at the way we do something in Salesforce, and then I'll look at the way another platform does it, or another implementation does it. And you know, I really want to learn the kind of core engineering aspects, and there's just no shortages of things to learn in that space.
Sure. So you've mentioned before about it's your responsibility to do the best thing for the customer, right? Or who your employer, or and obviously now you've progressed from being a developer, a senior developer, a tech lead, and now an engineering lead. Is that something that you think everyone that in terms of taking the responsibility, like is the reason you've become an engineering lead because you always had that mindset and it kind of helps you get there by doing the right thing all the time, and you know, that led you to being where you are?
It definitely helps. I mean, I think going back to those skills that I probably started to pick up way back, I was just doing freelance web dev. It's just that empathy for, like, you know, I know my personal interest is I'd love to show some like super cool, you know, let's say some reusable code or a reusable component that I can embed. And at the end of the day, the techies that I work with might get a buzz off that. But at the end of the day, the people who are kind of funding your project and are looking for a return from that funding are really after a solution that'll solve their problem. That's all it comes down to. It's like the reason why the money's forked out and the reason why these systems are vested in is people have a problem and you need to solve it. So keeping that very close kind of thought into, you know, being empathetic and almost like joining in that stakeholders' drive in solving their problem is one aspect that I find like has really assisted in, you know, implementing successful projects.
Sure.
It is. I do it myself. It is very easy to get, you know, lost in some a new shiny piece of tech or, you know, a new cool kind of tool that's on the market. But at the end of the day, I think if you're able to keep, you know, almost the number one priority being, you know, your interest as well as the stakeholder's interest to solve whatever the underlying issue is, you know, you'll find things like, you know, we want less clicks, and you know, a lot of the times feedback like that can be frustrating. But at the end of the day, all they're after is they just want to make it as easy as possible for these people to do their job.
Sure. So obviously, your approach has never changed. But what have you had to change personally to become an engineering lead? Like, what have you had to learn, not just technology, but yeah, what skills do you have now that you've kind of learned along the way that make you the engineering lead that you are?
I mean, naturally going through, I've obviously putting aside the learning of from a technical perspective. So just learning how things work and how things hang together and the way that, you know, best practices on how you should implement things. And, you know, I think a lot of the time that I've spent kind of learning to grow to this area has been more around the people, because you hear a lot of kind of corny, you know, sayings about, you know, having a good team around you and having good people around you. And it can sometimes be a bit overplayed in, you know, quotes with nice fonts and pretty floral backgrounds on LinkedIn, but like there is a lot of truth to it. And I think, you know, a lot of the time that I spend, even in this role now, I dedicate a lot of my time, sometimes more than I'd like, into kind of recruiting and into to building a good team. And even the definition of a good team just comes around, like, you know, the person who's leading the implementation, you know, that team has to be an extension of their thought pattern. And you need to get to a point where there's kind of a cohesive unit and there's enough, you know, whether it's diversity through your backgrounds or the outcomes you're trying to achieve in the project. You know, there are people that need to be on the team that would achieve a technical outcome, and there needs to be people on the team that are almost kind of speaking for the business, and they're after the functional outcome. And then obviously you've got your people on the team that look after security and testing, and they're looking after specific outcomes. So I think a lot of the time that I've spent, I guess, growing into this role, it goes without saying that you do need to continue learning and growing your technical understanding, especially if you're going to be in a role where you're making decisions or giving out advice. But I think, yeah, a lot of the learning has just been around more of the kind of people, team building, and being able to build relationships with your team.
And had you always wanted to manage?
I wouldn't say so, no. I think I wouldn't necessarily say it was a goal. I mean, I think like anyone, I definitely had a sight for career progression. And I guess that, I wouldn't necessarily say I ever had a long-term plan, but, you know, as we touched on before, I think we're lucky in this market that opportunities a lot of the time present themselves, as opposed to having to go find opportunities. And who's to say that it will forever be like that? But at least in this current time, you know, I've kind of, like many people in the Salesforce ecosystem, have had the luxury of having a lot of opportunities come across their way and almost being able to pick which ones are worth kind of chasing after.
Sure. Because it's interesting, because a lot of, if we look at your roles over the years, a lot of people would have gone in a different direction in the Salesforce ecosystem, and that's chasing the certified technical architect route. And yeah, I would say, if we look back to when you were a senior developer, like, you could have gone either way. And even like in your last role, right, you could have gone either way, and you still could go either way. But it's so interesting to see, because you're not really a certification kind of person, how many people are, and everyone's heading this way, right? I would say 90% of the people we speak to, but that you've gone down the management route, and you can still be really successful if you're not a CTA. Like, it's, you don't have to go down that route. You can still have a really successful career by being an engineering lead or having a different focus.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the same can be said, you know, stripping out the Salesforce matter for that. And, you know, even you just look at, like, you know, tertiary qualification, for example, like, just because you don't have a degree doesn't mean you're not a smart person. And I think that it does go a long way. I mean, especially, you know, like, you know, taking Salesforce, for example, if you really do kind of want to dig your heels into the Salesforce platform and you really do love the ecosystem and you want to learn more about it, then certification is the best route to go down. Like, it's going to be the kind of richest experience. There's a brilliant community around it, and there's plenty of opportunity to get together in groups and learn. And it's a good route to go down if that's what interests you. And Salesforce does interest me. I mean, if it didn't interest me, I wouldn't be in this role and remaining so long within the Salesforce ecosystem. I just think that my interest is more of, like I said, understanding just general engineering. And I think a lot of those things that I learn, I can then apply to Salesforce, which I, you know, being in this role, I kind of deal with Salesforce on a day-to-day basis. And when you have a good team around you, you're learning off them, they're learning off you, you're, you know, sharing release notes and discussing upcoming features. And there's enough within your team and within the ecosystem that you build yourself to still learn on Salesforce, but you're kind of just doing it as a byproduct of being in the role that you're
sure.
in. Whereas, yeah, I think for me, again, I guess you're just kind of following an interest.
Yeah.
It depends, you know, what it is that kind of tickles your fancy. And for me, it is more of the kind of general engineering.
And then let's look at the hiring into your team, because I think everyone knows I can be outspoken on LinkedIn around things I've seen and heard. And you've commented on a few of my posts around hiring Salesforce developers.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes it can be great. There's a few more people in the market, and other times there's hardly anyone in the market that people want to hire. So, you know, the experienced engineers, the people that understand software engineering. Do you look for software engineers, or do you look for Salesforce developers? And do you think there is a difference? And then also, how have you built a team in a challenging market like this?
I'd say, like, even just starting with the term Salesforce developer, I mean, just those two words is like, you can write code and you know Salesforce. So that in itself is, you know, when you're out there looking for a Salesforce developer, like, I personally, you know, I like to build teams that, like I said, have a high kind of core engineering practice. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, just having a basic understanding of source control, of CI pipelines, of good coding practices, and then, you know, there are, of course, the other aspects of Salesforce developers where you've come from a functional background or maybe a business background. You've spent years configuring the platform and you've kind of been around code long enough to first start reading it. And then you find that you can start authoring it. And Apex is a really nice environment where a lot of things are pre-written for you. So like I said, when I kind of took that first role in Salesforce, it is an opportunity for you to just focus on coding. And it is a nice progression path for people that want to move into engineering, but maybe have a business or a functional background. But I mean, even just that explanation there, the term Salesforce developer is so broad, and even the judgment on, you know, what a good Salesforce developer is completely held by the person, you know, depending what they're looking for. Like you may find someone that may not necessarily write the cleanest code in the world and may not necessarily know source control, but they can build applications really quickly and they can deploy them through chain sets, and that's what that organization is after, and that works for them. Whereas, you know, I'm looking for my specific, almost like a cookie cutter requirements on what I'm looking for an engineer, and it's difficult because I've seen the posts around, you know, people advertising for admins and then giving out coding questions, and it really is becoming such a blended thing, you know. I think, you know, JDs are a little bit underrated because at least in a JD, you can go, hey, I'm looking for a Salesforce engineer, and you know, maybe you know source control, and you know CI pipelines, and there'll be a coding assessment, and you're kind of giving people an expectation for that role. Versus, we're looking for a functional consultant that knows how to write some code. So if we need to fix something that a partner's implemented, we can do that without having to go back to the partner.
Sure. Yeah, I completely agree with, you know, everyone has different expectations and also needs. So yeah, someone that can write a little bit of code can, and they do call themselves developers, but there can be a real difference, right? And I think where I really see it is with engineering managers or CTOs or people that work in tech businesses, like they have a different expectation than someone that works for a business where Salesforce sits in sales. They're always going to have different expectations. So it's very difficult to hire developers, I find.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, and I was going to say even like if you have a look at like the consulting model, you know, it kind of depends like who's bringing in the consultant, because, you know, 8 times out of 10, it's someone with a business background that's hiring someone, again, to solve a problem that they have. So bringing on someone that can write code and automate some of their workflows and build some custom screens, it works perfectly for them and they get exactly what they're after. Whereas, you know, myself, whether it's going to market or whether it's engaging consultancies, and I have an expectation as a almost like a technical product owner and an engineering lead, you know, I'm really kind of looking to grill people on the technical side. It can be difficult for consultants because you almost don't know what side you're going to get.
And have you found, obviously hiring for the team, have you found that people are quite, throughout interviews, have you found success in grilling people technically regularly, or is it more often than not someone isn't quite comfortable with that technical grilling?
I think it depends how you're doing it. I mean, usually if I'm conducting an interview, I just like to ask open-ended questions because I just want you to talk. Like I can usually gauge, you know, your level of kind of technical competency. I know there are a lot of interviews and it depends what role you're going for, but you might be asked to like solve an algorithm on a board, for example. But, you know, I just like to get the other person talking and just listen to what it is you're doing and what challenges you've had and how you solved them. And it's a good aspect to understand their kind of people skills, and you can kind of see how they go in conversations and how they can just explain something that they've had experience for in their background. But I find the kind of real hurdle is the assessment. So, you know, normally like I'll usually lean on like a general kind of engineering assessment that could theoretically be written in any language, or depending on the background of the person, a specific Salesforce assessment. And I think normally when you get that, you know, to that stage of the process, then that's when you can usually determine whether the person that you're hiring is a fit for your team or not.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So we've obviously gone through a lot of your career, but what really interests you now? Like, what is your focus? So I'm hearing a lot about you in the DevOps space, but is that just because that's what you've been busy working on recently, or is that something that you're now passionate about?
There's definitely, I guess, a bit of a passion when it comes to DevOps, but it comes back to that learning from working at kind of a large scale tech company where like DevOps is just a means to an end. And at the end of the day, you know, I get a lot of return from my teams in implementing a strong DevOps pipeline because of its original purpose. You know, we get automated code checks. We get automated code linting, which lends itself back to the whole system looks like it's been written by one person. And then even just opening up your implementation to source and then having a peer review process is two-factor in that, you know, nothing is going to progress unless it's been sense checked by at least one more person. But just going through that process also, it's back to just, you know, indirectly learning on the job. So like if, you know, if I'm a developer and another developer raises a PR and I'm reviewing your code, I might read something and go, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Like this is a, you know, I would write that in 20 lines, but you've done it in 3. That's actually pretty nifty. And you don't let that slip when you're doing the pull request, because you'll just give the feedback on the other stuff, but you're just learning by just being around other people's code.
Sure.
And this is something that's it's very common in the majority of, like, you know, let's say engineering practices in writing, you know, let's say software from scratch, whether it's back end, front end, you know, doesn't really matter. But I think I personally got involved in DXs. I'd known that was an issue for a long time, and I wasn't happy with the way that kind of force.com projects used to work. And I kind of got to a point where it was becoming more troublesome to try and maintain a force.com project in source than it was to just deploy through change requests or, you know, packaging or whatever. But DX was kind of like that light at the end of the tunnel that was, I guess, a glimmer of hope that we could reach the same level of engineering that a lot of people that work in other platforms have enjoyed.
Sure.
So yeah, just jumping in, and again, it just goes back to being inquisitive. It piqued my interest. You know, I kind of got involved in looking into it. And then it was good timing that it came out while I was at that tech company, because we had a lot of people that were very skilled in DevOps that I could ask for assistance and learn off very quickly. And it was also good because they had a very high bar in the way that they deployed applications.
Yeah, no.
So the challenge was almost like, how can I get Salesforce to do that? And how can we have feature parity in our pipelines, even though I'm working on a SaaS system and you're working on a hosted cluster on AWS?
And I'm pretty sure you achieved it, right? I think at Dreamforce, there was a talk about the comparisons to the other systems or platforms that were being used.
Yeah, we got pretty damn close, that's for sure. I mean, Salesforce still has its nuances that you kind of have to dance around. But I guess the crux of the implementation and what we managed to achieve, which impressive, considering we only really worked on it for about, I want to say, between 3 to 6 months to kind of get it stood up and implemented.
Yeah. Nice.
And I think even at the time, it may seem daunting picking up DX, and it may seem that you need like a bit of a mob to get it done. But I think the implementation was just done by, you know, myself and the lead engineer, you know, at that time. And we had people jumping in and out and assisting us where we needed some direction. But just the two of us managed to get it done while doing the rest of our, let's say, business commitments.
Sure.
in the systems that we were building. So it's one of those things. It may seem daunting, but kind of once you jump in and have a poke around, it's not too bad.
And finally, what does the future look like for you? And I know, obviously, you said before, if you know, you don't go seeking opportunities, but they come up, and you're relatively new in this role. So I'm not suggesting you're going to jump anywhere soon. But where do you go from engineering lead and engineering manager? Like, what excites you about the future?
I'll be honest, I have absolutely no idea. I mean, I think that, yeah, I've given zero thought as to where I'm headed next, or, you know, even if I'm kind of digging in and just staying here for the foreseeable future. But I know that, you know, I mean, even, you know, personally, I've got a sort of young family. So I found that, you know, the hitting the accelerator on the career has kind of hit the back step a little bit. And right now, my number one goal is to find a balance between, you know, spending time with my boys and with my family and continuing that inquisitive side of learning and just finding time to sit down and not necessarily have a goal in mind or an achievement in mind, but just learning for the sake of learning. And you're right. I mean, especially having not being in this role for so long, like it's, you know, it's another Salesforce implementation, and I know Salesforce and I can see where it can plug in, but you're plugging into a stack of systems that I've never used before. So, you know, just kind of digging in my heels there and kind of learning this whole new ecosystem is exciting.
Yeah, nice. Well, look, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed the chat. And I'm sure there's so much value in there for anyone on a similar journey or someone that's already operating at that level, and just to try and understand how you think and act and learn, I think is really key from that. So, and if anyone does want to hit you up for pick your brains, ask some questions about DX or anything like that, where's the best place?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best place to reach out. So yeah, search me up and reach out. I'd be happy to field any questions.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Cool. Cheers, Ben.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.